This is Jaguars Postgame, presented by Baptist Health System, GEICO, Rouse Chiropractic Clinic, and by EverBank. Stand by for highlights and the best analysis of today's Jaguars game. We go back to the broadcast booth. Here's Brian Sexton.
All right, Brian Sexton, Tony Boselli, JP Shadrick. Jeff Lagerman is making his way downstairs. We'll have the first word from head coach Gus Bradley, who has had one incredible week. First, his father dies last Sunday after that loss to San Diego, and then he's in North Dakota and Minnesota, and then he's got to come all the way across the pond and get his team ready to play. And then today, 42-10, the final against the San Francisco 49ers. He's a positive guy. He understands the task that was before him when he took this job, let alone where he is midway through the season. But I bet you he's got a big sigh letting out as he walks in the locker room tonight.
Oh, it's frustrating. Emotional week for Gus, as you talked about it, with the passing of his father. He came in on Wednesday to get here with the team. They had a good week of practice, but then you know the frustration levels at a very high level after the way the last 2 weeks have gone. You know, if you think back 4 weeks ago, St. Louis, Denver, we thought this team was getting better, going in the right direction in several areas. And you come out against the Chargers at home, don't put up a great performance, and then to have this type of game against, a very good team. None of us were saying that the Jaguars should win this game. We thought they would. But 42-10, and really in the first half giving up four long drives and never really showing any ability to stop the 49ers is extremely frustrating.
Right. And when you look at a 28-0 hole against these guys, I mean, you've got to have a lot of weaponry to come back, and the Jaguars just didn't have that today. Let's get a look at some of the numbers. The Comcast Business Final Fast Stats Check. J.P. Shadrick, kind enough to give those to us. J.P.?
Yeah, it starts with total yardage. San Fran outgained the Jaguars 398 to 318, but the big stat, of course, on the ground, 221 yards rushing for San Francisco today. The Jags only had 90 in this game, and, of course, you control the run game, you control the game. That's what happened from the start for the 49ers today. Individual stats on the ground today. For San Francisco, Hunter goes 9 carries, 84 yards. Frank Gore, 19 carries, 71 yards, a 3.7 average with 2 touchdowns. Kaepernick, 7 carries, 54 yards. A couple of those scrambles went for long gains. His longest was 17, and 2 touchdowns on the ground for Kaepernick today. For the Jags on the ground, Maurice Jones-Drew, 19 carries, 75 yards, 3.9 per carry, a long of 30 in this game. Denard Robinson carried the ball 4 times for 15 yards. Passing today, not pretty for Chad Henne. 29 of 45, 228 yards, 1 touchdown, a rating of 84.3. For Kaepernick, he didn't have to throw the ball. 10 of 16, 164 yards, and a touchdown, a rating of just under 118. And McCoy came in the game late. Penalties for the Jaguars today, 6 for 76 yards. The 49ers only had 4. But boy, the story of the game, Brian and Tony, that running game for San Francisco. Controlled it, pounded it, physical, and they got the job done today.
Yeah, Kendall Hunter had 84 yards rushing. Frank Gore had 71. Kaepernick had 54. Kaepernick had 2 rushing touchdowns. Gore had 2 rushing touchdowns. I mean, you're talking about a powerful, powerful running offense, and the Jaguars were powerless to do anything about it. You know, I mean, it all starts up front, no doubt, and the Jaguars just don't have the horses to get it done.
No, and we said it at the top, if you recall, about this, the size differential. You look offensive defensive line for the 49ers. They're big. They're physical. They look the part, and they come play the part. And they overwhelmed this Jaguar defense especially. I mean, you never felt like they had an answer for anything they were doing. And JP's exactly right. It wasn't through the air. There weren't these big passing yardage or major gaffes down the field. It was old-fashioned football. I'm going to put my hands in the dirt, and I'm going to come off the ball and punch you in the mouth, and we're going to run it right down your throats until you stop us. And the Jaguars never stopped.
And not only did that stop them up front, but they missed tackles too. I mean, whether it was the rookie safeties or Alan Bowl, there were plenty of opportunities for the Jags here and there. And on defense, they just didn't have an answer. On offense, I mean, the thing that stands out the most to me, although it was 28-3 at the time, but the opening drive of the third quarter, they get it first and goal at the 7-yard line, and They throw it out in the flat to Will Taufo'o. He fumbles. It's at the 9. Now you got second and goal. Jags come away, turning the ball over with no points. Same thing here in the fourth quarter. You get the ball first and goal at the 5, and you have a quarterback read option with Chad Henne as one of those plays. And, you don't get into the end zone. So that's 2 point-blank scoring opportunities. At least the Jaguars have an opportunity to show better of themselves and to put some points on the board, and they just shoot themselves in the foot time in and time out.
Yeah, and just to kind of pile on those 2 instances, there's plays to be made out there that we don't make.
Yeah.
And, listen, we're not saying that would have led to a Jaguar victory, but it would have been a better showing. It would have been a closer game. And here's the thing about the game of football that you just don't know. If you make those plays, how does that change the overall feel and momentum and swing of the game? Where does it go? I mean, go all the way back to the first. If they get the fumble on the opening kickoff,
right.
I mean, there's little plays that are out there to be made that a team that is not that good right now and maybe not as talented, as the 49ers, you have to make plays and take advantage of opportunities that are on the pitch.
Well, the play,
the
people, Brits like to say,
in England like to say.
The play that stands out the most on that is Justin Blackmon at the 19-yard line with a shot. If he just stops long enough to catch the ball instead of running before he's got it, and he dropped it, but he probably gets to the end zone, and at the end of the half, it's 4 more points. I get it. It's 28-7. You've got some momentum coming in that you can take back out to start the fourth quarter. The third quarter, second half.
Absolutely. And those are huge. I mean, the game of football, a lot of times, when you boil it down and break it down, is made up of 4 to 6 big plays that change momentum or change the outcome of the ball game. And in a 42-10 ball game, maybe that's not the case, but it definitely would change the ability to get it into the fourth quarter and try to make something go your way.
You know, you got to look big picture here, because when you look at the 49ers, you go back to 2006 when they drafted Vernon Davis and 2007 when they grabbed Joe Staley, and then they started putting the pieces in place. I mean, this team was not built in 1 or 2 drafts. It's not like you're going to go from whatever this year turns out to being this powerful in a year or even 2. It'll be interesting to follow this team as they come back to Wembley Stadium over the next 4 years, right? Well, 3 more years now, and to see where they are in 2015. 2016.
Well, and that'll be largely determined by Dave Caldwell
exactly. And
who he picks up. I mean, the draft is going to be huge. That's how they've determined they're going to build this franchise and how they're going to gather the talent to make it a contender. And that lands on the shoulders of one person and his staff, and that's Dave Caldwell and the scouts.
And
so it's a big task, big opportunity, though, because he has had the opportunity to build this thing and to build this team the way he feels is best. And the proof will be over the next several years.
All right, let's check in with Jeff Loggeman, who has the head coach in the Jaguars locker room directly beneath us. Jeff?
All right, thank you, Brian. Gus, we had talked earlier in the week, you wanting to get out to a fast start with your football team, and you guys weren't able to do that against a fine football team in the 49ers.
Well, they are. You know, give credit where credit's due. They're a real good team, and we knew that coming in. It was going to be a physical game. And, I thought it was better, but with our spirit today. I did see that, and I saw our guys' effort, but we still continue to give up too many explosive plays, missed tackles, things like that, and we can control those.
Defensively, it always, in my book, starts with stopping the run. How do you guys get to the point where you're stopping the run consistently?
Well, I think we need to take a look at some things. And, you know, we've got a bye week. And we can really dig in deep and find out, you know, some of the issues. I know we missed some tackles, guys in the open field. And that means we do more tackling drills than we do that. And, we also missed some fits. They're an explosive team and explosive in the run game. And they have been for a couple of years now. And, we need to slow down the run at least.
Offensively, it seemed like Chad couldn't find his rhythm.
Well, you know what? Offensively, it did feel better, though, with the mixing of the run and the pass. And maybe the completion percentage wasn't quite like it was last week. But again, the turnover hurt us on offense. But as far as moving the ball, got a little bit better in the red zone. And we took some chances down there and some fourth downs. And those are the ones we got to capitalize on.
This has been a very different week overall for your football team. Comment on what it's been like.
Well, in some areas, it's been really good. You know, I think that as far as coming together, all those things that have happened in the past, we are close-knit. But I think that, you know, this bye week, we really need to reevaluate some things. And we all need to recommit and, determine ourselves really what we want to get accomplished.
Will Rackley left the game, looked like a head contusion or a head concussion, whatever it is. Was he the only guy injury to report?
That's the latest. I haven't got anything from Mike yet, so I'll get that here in the next couple minutes.
All right, thank you, guys.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that's the head coach with Jeff Loggeman first in our postgame show after every Jaguars game, and you heard the Baptist Health injury update. The only one we know of at this point is Will Rackley, who left the ball game in the first half with a head contusion. Obviously, the Jaguars have 2 weeks before they play again in Nashville. And that brings me to a point. You know, it's been brutal travel-wise. You know, you go to California and you stay out there, Tony, for 10 days while you play two times. You play Oakland and Seattle, and, you know, then you go back to Denver, and then you come over here, and then you come home, you get a bye week, and then you go back to Nashville. So by the time 10 weeks are gone in the NFL, the Jaguars will have only been home three times. Second half, that means they've got a shot over the last couple of weeks to play in front of their home crowd, hopefully improve their performance.
And the schedule gets easier for this team as well.
All right.
If I'm correct, it's been the hardest schedule so far in the NFL as far as win percentage and the opponents they've had. So that does get easier moving forward.
Let's go back downstairs and hear from Maurice Jones-Drew, who had his best statistical game of the season.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Tony, here with Maurice. And Maurice, certainly a long way to come to play a football game and not the results you guys probably were expecting.
No. You know, we just really didn't execute. You know, it just seems right now that we're not executing at a level to earn wins. And so we just have to kind of take this week and see, kind of just self-evaluate and see, you know, is it, when enough's enough and kind of come back out with a different mindset, different attitude, and really get it right in practice. That's where it starts. We've had some good practices, better than most, but they're just not good enough. So we have to come back and really just execute our game plan at a higher level.
As a team, when you're watching, calling these games, you know, it seems like every week there's a personal foul or there's missed opportunities, a drop pass here, a drop pass there, a missed tackle here and a missed tackle there. What's it going to take to get that effort that you guys had against the Denver Broncos or a performance similar to what you guys had against the Denver Broncos on a week-in and week-out basis?
This is consistency. You got to continue to work at that. It takes time. We knew that coming into this year that – with a lot of young guys playing, there's going to be some inconsistent performance, but we felt like we'd be able to, you know, kind of overcome that a little bit. Obviously, when you're not winning, you know, it's tough. So we just got to continue to work, and I think it'll come around here very soon. We're making strides. We're doing better. It's just not showing. We're playing teams that are obviously getting better every week, so we have to get better faster.
This is the first of 4 years coming over here to play game, and I know that your contract is up after this year, but your impressions on the experience here this week?
Oh, it was a great experience. The fans were great. Obviously, the hotels we stayed in were phenomenal. It was just an awesome experience, especially for guys, you know, some like myself who probably wouldn't have got this if it wasn't for football. So we're very grateful for this, and hopefully, you know, in the next couple of years, we can get this thing going and then come back and get some victories.
All right. Thank you, Maurice.
No problem.
All right. Our postgame show brought to you by Crown Royal Maple. Whiskey started, maple finished. Our Bueller Swiss Watch MVP is?
Mike Brown.
Mike Brown for his nice touchdown catch.
Yeah, and he played a good game. And
continues to play well for the Jaguars.
Give him credit. He breaks his back early in the year, so then he misses a number of games. Everyone thought that Ace Sanders was going to be that third receiver with Cecil and Justin. And he comes and wins the job. And he's performing and he's proven why he's given the opportunity. He's making nice plays. He's consistent, reliable, and he's done a nice job.
And Jeff will hand Mike Brown a Bueller Swiss Watch. You can get yours at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, Park Jewelers in Lake Mary, Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, Cranford Jewelry in Moultrie, Georgia, Hope Jewelers in Jacksonville. Jaguars failed to convert, get any points on their opening drive of the third quarter, and they left it for the Niners at their own five. Now, they drove the ball out, and it was a fumble. Colin Kaepernick and Frank Gore misconnected. It was recovered by Russell Allen. Jaguars kind of drive their way back up the field, but they face third and 11 at the 29-yard line. You're wondering, are they going to settle for a field goal? Well, that's when Mike Brown got behind the secondary, and Chad Henne hit him in stride. That's our Bud Light play of the game. Tight end right and three wide. There's the snap, five-man pressure. Henne plants, turns, and throws, and he's got a man! And this is a Jacksonville touchdown! Mike Brown pulls it in over the shoulder! That's our Bud Light play of the game, brought to you by Bud Light, the sure sign of a good time. Here we go, and the Jaguars hope to go towards the win column, but first they go to the bye week. Tony, any parting thoughts?
Well, listen, I think what Gus said is exactly right. You got to reevaluate. You got to go back in, look at what you've done these first eight games. Obviously, it's not good enough at 0-8. And challenge guys to take a few days off, get ready to come back, practice, prepare for the last eight games, and see if you can come out, get better each week, and get some wins in the last eight.
All right. Thanks so much, Tony, for Jeff Loggeman and for Tony Buscelli, for J.P. Shadrick, for Scott Kushner and Joe Fortunato. I'm Brian Sexton. We're going to hand it off to Matt Augustine, Marco Coleman, Linda Fortunato, Ed Rocco. They'll take you the rest of the way. We'll be stateside tomorrow night, hopefully about 6:30. The Jaguars get home and get thinking about the second half of the season. Thanks so much for joining us this historic week in London. Very good for the Jaguars and the city of Jacksonville. We'll find out if they can improve the field performance and make it equal here in the coming weeks. Good night, everybody. You've been listening to Jaguars football from London at Wembley Stadium on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome inside the HananiaAudios.com studio here inside Everbank Field alongside former NFL defensive end Marco Coleman, former Jacksonville Jaguar Marco Coleman. I'm Matt Augustine in for Jeremy Ratliff, and I'll be in for Jay Gray along for the scoreboard show here in about an hour. And Marco, as we take a look back at this game today, 42-10 the final from Wembley Stadium in London. Man, that's an awfully long trip to make for 10 points.
Especially the way you lost. You figure defensively it was just a physical mismatch, it seemed like. You know, giving up 220 yards versus the run, it's a direct sign of the physicality of the offensive team.
And we talked a little bit about this, you and I, during the game as we were watching it. Just even you could see off the line the push that the two teams were getting. You talk about that physicality. Bigger, stronger athletes. You kept saying through the game, man, those San Francisco linebackers are scary. These guys are big. They're fast. And a big reason why, while we did see 75 yards out of Maurice Jones-Drew, other than a 10, maybe 13-yard run he ripped off a couple of times, nothing that really stood out.
Yeah, and it was tough. You know, these guys are not a mismatch at all with the running backs or tight ends for any team in the league, and they do the best of getting off blocks, and they get to the corner and the edge is so fast. Maurice, like you said, did have a lot better day today, one of his better rushing seasons, rushing games for the season, 19 carries, 75 yards, and he looked good. And then not only that, you know, in the receiving end, he did some really good things, catching the ball, had 6 catches, 47 yards, 7.8 a catch, and that was significant. They actually had a chance in the second half to move the ball. They moved the ball, but no scoring.
Scoring at all. And, I mean, it was a tale of two halves, and it was another thing that you and I had kind of just talked a little bit about before the show here was just you saw just 28-3 going into the locker room. They could have just rolled over and said, well, this is done. And instead they come out in the second half and really show some poise. Chad Henne especially stepping up, completing some passes. Mike Brown obviously had that great touchdown catch. Mm-hmm. You saw a very different team come out there in the second half, I think.
Yeah, and that's a testament to the professionalism. You know, there is some upgrades that definitely need to occur on this roster, but you can say about the guys that are out there, I don't like to use the phrase of they didn't give up or they kept on playing hard, not in professional sports, because it's your job to do that. And these guys today, I can say that they did throughout the game they played. You know, and they were overmatched in a lot of positions, but they still came out and they conducted themselves as professionals.
Defensive mismatch is a big reason why the Niners seem to be able to move the ball so effectively against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And as we get into our Comcast lightning fast questions of the game here, Marco, I mean, I don't know how many exactly we can pull out of this game. There were a few, mm-hmm. but I guess real quick, let's start off with what positive can you pull out of this game for the Jaguars?
You know, you said it. You know, that second half, you know, those first two possessions, they were able to move the ball. 15-play drive, a 17-play drive. And, hey, we're talking about the San Francisco 49er defense and those outstanding linebackers. But, hey, man, these cats, they couldn't score. That would be the only negative part about that. They didn't give up any sacks. Here it is, this tonic rush and everything about this big-time defense. And they kept Henne clean. And so the pass blocking was really good. And then that second half, again, the defense created turnover. You know, so those are some things positively that they can take out and say that we were able to do something at some point during the game.
I expect Gus to say something about that in the locker room, at least to point those things out. Second question here, Marco. We know, and Brian said it during the game, at 0-8, the rebuilding process is in full swing, but it can't really start until we have a quarterback. We know that's a position need. What's another position need that the Jaguars are looking at here this year?
I'm going to say the entire front seven. I mean, you know, 220 yards rushing today, 153 yards are given out on the season, and that's a direct reflection of not the the secondary, but the, you know, those guys up front. I mean, and that's where you have all the experience. You would think that right here on this team that the experience would be up front. You know, those guys would be able to carry not only the defense but the team, because everyone across that front seven, Posluszny, Hayes, Russell, Miller, Cindric Marks, all these guys have been in the league. These aren't, we're not talking about rookies, and they're not able to get it done.
The pass rusher has been a perennial need of the
Jaguars.
And
a pass
rusher. It's just, and a pass rusher. That's who they need.
Seven.
They
there
need that.
Yep.
And that's exactly, you spoke to it, Marco. Last question. We had, like we said, some flashes of maybe not, well, flashes of brilliance, maybe some good spots here to look at. Who stepped up and did his job the best, do you think, for the Jaguars?
You know, it was a really good day for Maurice, but I think Mike Brown, you know, because he can, you know, he's a guy that you wouldn't expect to make those plays, big plays. You know, he only had three catches, but they were big plays. You know, you figure he had 14 yards per catch, and then, you know, being able to make a play in the end zone, got the big penalty called on him, because he was, so that also helped. You know, I think the pass, the PI that he created. So I think he had a really good day that sparked and gave some life to the offense where a lot of areas they weren't.
All right, those were our Comcast lightning fast questions of the game. Marco Coleman rifling through them. And you kind of mentioned a penalty there a minute ago, and that was another thing I kind of noticed throughout the course of this game is we've talked about in the past just how the Jaguars can get a little ahead of themselves sometimes and maybe end up with some penalties that they shouldn't have, roughing, unnecessary roughness after the play, that sort of thing. You saw that dialed back a little bit today. And, in fact, the Jaguars got a few breaks on penalties for once this season.
but they still have six penalties for 76 yards. When you're a team that you come in and already undermatched, those are the type of things that you can't have if you want to give yourself even a chance against teams like this. And that's, you know, again, that's been a recurring thing. And my, you know, and the issue with it is not so much that it's the young guys that are creating these penalties. It's the veterans. You know, these are the guys that you're depending on to help get the team moving, and they're creating situations that make it tough for the entire team.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll get back to Marco Coleman and myself in just a minute. Geico putting a winning lineup together is tough. Getting a quote from Geico is not. Visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. Contact your local Geico office today. This is the Jaguars post-game show here on the Jaguars Radio Network. Welcome back to the Jaguars post-game show here from inside the HananiaAutos.com studio inside Everbank Field. My name is Matt Augustine. I'm stepping in this afternoon alongside me, former Jaguars defensive end Marco Coleman. Marco, we saw 42-10 today, and a few bright flashes from the Jaguars. Few things to walk out of there to be happy about, but the big experience, the big picture of all of this, going over there, expanding the brand, putting the Jaguars out there. I got to tell you, I was shocked by the number of, and we've been hearing this all week, I was shocked by the number of Jaguars fans there. Even 49ers fans we saw waving Jaguars flags in the stands, you know?
I'll tell you what, man, I was just in the stands watching a football game, a high school football game. It was University Christian versus another team, and it was their homecoming. And they got up on this team really, really bad. And I was on the home side with University Christian. And after it got to a point that the other team, it just didn't seem anything was going to happen for them, when they started making plays, the parents on the home side started cheering for them. So sometimes, you start feeling sorry for the other guy, and they do something because you want to watch a good game too. You know, just give us something to cheer about, or just to say, some kind of agony. But I think that's what you saw, and it felt like a home game, I would say, for the Jaguars, for as many people that were cheering for them.
Absolutely. And why don't we jump into now? It's time now for the Metro PCS Sexton Summary. This is normally the part of the game where Brian would give you some of the lowdown on the statistics. I'm not Brian Sexton, but I'll have to do for the time being. Taking a look at it, the total yardage for each team. San Francisco, 398. Jacksonville, 318. So not too bad in the grand scheme of things. Four penalties on San Francisco for 35 yards. Jacksonville had six penalties for 76 yards. Time of possession was another thing that we had to look at last week. The Chargers had the ball for almost 38 minutes. Really gave the Jacksonville offense no chance to get out on the field. This time a little bit better. In fact, the Jacksonville Jaguars held the ball for 31 minutes. The San Francisco 49ers just 28. So you had a little bit better of a look at it this week. Hopefully that'll continue. They'll be able to keep the offense out there. Colin Kaepernick, meanwhile, for the quarterbacks, 10 of 16, 164 yards and a touchdown. Colt McCoy also completed a pass for 13 yards. Chad Henne, 29 of 45 for 228 yards and a touchdown for him. On the rushing side of things, it seemed Colin Kaepernick could just move the ball at will on the ground against the Jaguars defense, especially in that first half. He had 54 yards on 7 rushes and 2 touchdowns. Frank Gore matched him in that touchdown category. He ran the ball 19 times for 71 yards. Meanwhile, for the Jaguars, Maurice Jones-Drew having his best offensive game of the season. 75 yards on 19 carries. He averaged 3.9 per carry, including ripping off his longest rush of the year, 30 yards for him. So, and again, a good start for Maurice Jones-Drew here as he tries to pick things back up. Certainly has not been the year he has wanted as his contract years run out, and he's going to be looking to re-sign with the Jaguars or someone else next year. That remains to be seen. For receiving, Anquan Boldin caught the ball 4 times for San Francisco for 56 yards. Bruce Miller also had 56 yards. The only person to catch a touchdown for the 49ers, tight end Vernon Davis, he had 3 catches for 52 yards. Meanwhile, Cecil Shorts led the way for the Jaguars receiving corps, 7 catches on 74 yards. Mike Brown, again, we talked about him as being a standout today. 3 catches for 43 yards and the only Jaguars touchdown over the course of this game. Justin Blackmon having a little bit of trouble out there, catching a few balls, 4 catches for 31 yards. Mercedes Lewis, not much of a factor on the offensive side of the ball today. Marco, that's something you and I had talked a little bit about, him having to step up, not only on the offensive side of things, but also as a blocker. He's been out for so long, in and out with injuries. He hasn't been somebody that Maurice Jones-Drew's been able to run behind.
Yeah, and fumbling the ball. I mean, come on.
You can't have that, especially that close to the goal line at that point in the game. That was the Metro PCS Sexton Summary with no signed contracts. Metro PCS lets you unlimit yourself. We got more post-game show coverage coming back for you. The second half of this, Marco Coleman and me, Matt Augustine, on the Jaguars post-game show. You're on Jaguars Radio.
This portion of Jaguars postgame is brought to you by Brooks Rehabilitation, UL Knowledge Services, Eiselborn Chiropractic and Sports Medicine, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank. Jaguars postgame continues right now.
42-10 is your final from Wembley Stadium in London, England today. The San Francisco 49ers over the Jacksonville Jaguars. And back here on the other side of the pond, I'm joined at the Hanania Autos.com studio by Marco Coleman. We're talking Jaguars and San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, we watched this game. We saw, you know, the Jaguars try to get off the ground on in terms of running the ball, and they did a little bit more today. Hanny had a few moments where he looked like he was in mid-season form, as he should be, considering we're halfway through the season now. But you had kept saying, and as over the course of the game, Mark, we're watching this, and there are a lot of plays where they're optioning in. You know, they got Henny out there, and it's just a one-back set. And there was actually at the beginning of the game when you first started to notice this, when they ran Denard Robinson a couple of times, just straight out of the back and kind of a slam just right up the middle. And you sat there and you said, well, why don't they bring in a fullback? Why don't they bring in another fast, you know, somebody like an Ace Sanders or somebody to serve as a blocker? I guess in terms of the play calling, how can you see them changing things up maybe to make a little bit easier for them on the ground?
Well, you know, we watched a team in San Francisco schematically figure out a way to take advantage of the athleticism of their quarterback. When they line up and you have pretty basically a formation where you got the quarterback and 2 blockers, basically. He's still in the shotgun. And that's, you know, on the first touchdown, I believe, by Kaepernick, it was a design run. And when you have a player like Denard Robinson, who, you know, he's considered an offensive weapon. I think he needs to go back to offensive weapon because he's not a running back. Those are the perfect type of plays for him. You know, Henny, in those plays, when you do give the ball to Denard Robinson, you're taking out, you can add a blocker instead of having Henny. You know, Henny's not going to do anything to help you once the ball is handed off. There's the defenses aren't threatened by him passing the ball anyway, so why not go ahead and add another blocker? By taking Henny out of the game, you allow another guy to come in to block for Denard Robinson for those perimeter plays. As you saw in the second half, when they started to toss the ball to him, get him out there a little bit more space, direct snapping it to him, gives him an opportunity to get that going faster. You know, instead of going, you know, you're cutting out the middleman by handing it to Henny, you know what I mean? Bringing an extra blocker to help him get to that edge, because I think it was even on a reverse or something that came out. Henny's just backed up. He's out the way. And the first guy in the line of scrimmage that had to contain was there waiting to make the tackle. if you bring in another blocker while taking the quarterback out, you'll have opportunities to make those plays go. And like I said, and as an offensive coordinator, they got to recognize those things. They got to recognize the utilizing the talents that they have. And here in the offensive league, you saw they didn't take advantage of those things. At least they haven't this season.
How did you feel about just the play calling in general, just on the offensive side of the ball? I mean, even and on the defensive side of the ball, I think it was there were some more. I guess there were a few more maybe issues on the offensive side of the ball. You had, I know a lot of, I heard Brian and Jeff Lagerman talking about it in the fourth quarter there on 4th and 5, backed up against their old goal line. They throw underneath to Maurice Jones-Drew, and he just gets stuffed at the line of scrimmage. Do you think there need to be changes made in terms of the way that they're calling plays, especially close into the end zone like that?
Yeah, it's just, I want to say, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. You know, you can look and say, oh, he called this and he shouldn't have called that. My thing is just, and it's been taking place all season, is utilizing the best players in order to get it done. You get the ball in crucial situations to people that don't have the experience to get it done, especially against a top-notch defense and a big-time player. You get down the 5-yard line, you got a player that's been playing the league for a long time, and Maurice Jones-Drew, you should give him those opportunities. Electrifying player like Denard Robinson, you got to give him that opportunity. Blackman, Mercedes Lewis, first time down, they throw it to Tafau on a 4th down. Are you kidding me? That's not the guy you're going to give it to on the screen to go down there. He's not one of the most athletic, but he's not going to make a big play. He cannot run the linebackers for the San Francisco 49ers. You know, so you don't create any mismatches. For instance, San Francisco, on the other hand, they get in the red zone. They realize that you have Vernon Davis out wide and you got a safety over him that's, you know, to cover him man-to-man. We don't have to worry about throwing it to him, even though throwing it to him was a mismatch too. We run the ball out there. Him blocked up, matched up on that guy. We know that's one guy that's taking out the equation. Get where they run the ball directly to him. You know, so creating the mismatches and putting himself in a position to win or to make those touchdowns, those are some things I think schematically they need to really go back and to reevaluate. Like I said, it's been taking place all season long.
Absolutely. Chad Henne, 29 of 45 for 228 yards, 1 touchdown. A decent showing for the Jaguars quarterback as Blaine Gabbert has been kind of moved back into a backup role. And there was some question as to whether or not you might see him over the course of the game, because there was a certain point there when they were down 28 to nothing where a lot of people going, well, what do they have to lose at this point, you know? But Chad Henne, I guess, could you give what would you give his performance in terms of a letter grade today? How do you think he looked?
I give him a C, you know, considering, you know, he went against one of the best defenses in the league, you know, and then he's not surrounded with all the best talent. Well, I won't even say that he is surrounded by talent. It's just the guys that are out there need to step up. Mercedes Lewis got to step up. He should be a mismatch for anybody that's out there. 6'6", can run, can block it when he's got his mind to it, but you can't create turnovers. You know, I think Maurice really helped the team. The drop balls by the wide receivers, the young guys in crucial situations. Blackman had a real, you know, we're trying to go, they're working down the field and had open pass and to drop those. You're going to be a big-time player. When you're playing against great teams, you got to take advantage of those type of opportunities. Cecil Shorts had a couple of drop balls. You know, those type of things, you got to be able to take advantage of the opportunities. And the guys, they weren't able to do that. And it's been the case all along. Henne is only going to be as good as the people around him. One good thing is the offensive line did a really good job of protecting Henne. Henne didn't have any issues because he is a sackable quarterback, but they eliminated that today, and that's a testament to the pass blocking offensive line today.
We've seen some other defensive lines just absolutely shred the front five of the Jaguars' offensive line. Today they certainly did do a much better job. I know we're probably backing up against a break here, but real quick before we do, Marco, just when you're a team like the Jaguars and you're in a situation like Chad Henne is today where you know that you have a lot of mismatches and a lot of bigger, better athletes on your team, how do you game plan for a defense like that as a quarterback when you know that you're going to be outmatched on a lot of plays just simply by personnel?
Well, you got to do some things, some movement, a little misdirection, a little deception will help. I mean, things weren't deceiving. You make it too easy. When you make it too easy, you allow the athleticism and just being overmatched by the other team to take over. A little more deception within the offense, I think that would have created more opportunities for the team.
42-10 is your final score from Wembley Stadium in London, England, North London. It will be the first of 4 games for Jacksonville in London over the next 4 seasons. You're listening to the Jaguars postgame show. It's brought to you by PRI Productions here on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Hey.
You're listening to the Jaguars postgame show from inside the HenneyAutos.com studio here at Everbank Field in Jacksonville, as our Jaguars radio counterparts over in England are rushing to get all their equipment packed up, back on the plane. They'll be heading out this evening as the Jaguars come back and get ready for their bye week, actually, coming up here. 0-8 heading into the bye week. Certainly not the start that Gus Bradley wanted to his first year as a head coach. Back here inside the studio with Marco Coleman, I'm Matt Augustine. And, you know, we touched a little bit on how the offense did last time and talked a little bit about how Chad Henne had handled things and trying to game plan for this defense that very much outmatched the Jaguars athletically. The defense, for the first half of the game, it seemed like the 49ers could pretty much do whatever they wanted to. It was movement without opposition at all.
It's no different than what happened last week with the San Diego Chargers. Now, the Chargers didn't have a lot of plays in that first half, but they still, you know, 13-play drive for 80 yards, a 10-play drive for 80 yards. They only had three possessions in that first half of the game, so it ate up clock. Now, here, when you talk about the San Francisco 49ers, they had like five drives, and only one of them they didn't score on. The rest, I think the other one was when they were heading out for the they just downed it because it was the end of the half. But the other four drives, they were able to sustain drives and score. Jaguars defense is just unable to get off the field. These long drives, it kills them. You know, for one, over the course of a game, it wears the defense out, and those other offenses know it. And then two, you allow the ball to stay in the hands of these outstanding players. The more opportunities that you give Colin Kaepernick, whatever his name is, the more opportunities you give him in that San Francisco 49er offense, they're going to get it in. And, you know, and you got to stop the run. Today, it was – they just physically came in and just manhandled the Jaguars. They ran the ball 38 times and passed to 17. You know, Kaepernick, you know, when we talked about earlier about offensively, he played the role of possibly like a Denard Robinson. I mean, to run the ball 38 times, you figure between Maurice Jones-Drew and Denard Robinson, you can get 38 good carries like that and create your team some opportunities. It eats up clock, helps eliminate the turnovers that you could possibly have, and you send a message. It was a physical message. It was, we're coming out here and we're going to move you around. And in the San Francisco 49ers, with every season, I mean every game, the Jaguars right now, they're not able to withstand that type of mentality of play.
No, definitely. It doesn't seem that way. And you know, just the fact that the defense, you know, did get a fumble out of it. A turnover is one thing they can certainly look to that was a plus out of that. Russell Allen recovering the fumble there. Definitely, it was a little strange to see that out of Frank Gore, usually very sure-handed ball carrier, and it just kind of squirted out, and Russell Allen able to fall on it there for the Jaguars. And we kind of talked about time of possession there, and just look at the change from last week. The Chargers had the ball for almost 38 minutes. You can't expect to win a football game when it's a 60-minute affair and 40 of them the ball spent in one team's hands.
Yeah, you know, like I said, we talked about it earlier, the professionalism. You know, defensively, they came out in that second half, played better, got the turnover. They didn't shut it down. You know, they came out as they should, as professionals, and continued to compete. You know, it's shown that they just don't have the roster, the players, to match up with San Francisco. But, you know, just causing a turnover, staying in the game, getting off the field more often in that second half shows that they continue to compete and make it, you know, at least make the 49ers work for what they did earn.
They certainly did, and there were a few more plays we were, you know, looking at just in terms of getting the ball moving. A lot of three and outs in the weeks past. This week they were able to get a few more drives. In fact, their last drive of the game the Jaguars had was a 17-play drive that went for 74 yards, and though they did turn it over on downs on that 4th-and-5, a little underneath dump, it was still, you know, it's about getting the momentum going, and it seems a lot of the times like the Jaguars will have a play that'll be big. They might get 20 yards on a pass or 15 on a run, but they can't string together the plays, it seems, to keep that momentum going, keep the team rolling down the field, and keep them wanting to play hard.
Right, and they just taking advantage of those opportunities that they have when they get into the red zone. That some kind of way, they've got to have players pick up. You figure Mercedes Lewis in the end zone should be the mismatch that you see with Calvin Johnson in the league. I mean, in these guys, there's no one physically that can match up with him in those short quarters, but you don't see him, you know, targeted. Last week, I think he was targeting the red zone, as a matter of fact, but he dropped the ball. He allowed a smaller defensive back to, you know, not to, to basically win in that matchup. So, you know, they have to find some guys, and they have to call plays to get the ball into the hands of the players that can make the plays. You know, it's just Henny in the red zone to me is not his time. I would even just, like I said, again, take him out and put Denard Robinson in there and just figure out some other ways.
42-10 is your final from Wembley Stadium. The Jaguars racking up 318 yards and, hey, 21st downs. Not too bad over the in the grand scheme of things. You're listening to the Jaguars post-game show. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. This is the Jaguars post-game show. Matt Augustine and Marco Coleman on Jaguars Radio. We're back inside Everbank Field, the HannityAutos.com studio with Marco Coleman. I'm Matt Augustine, stepping in this afternoon for the Jaguars post-game show. 42-10 is your final from Wembley Stadium in London as the team packs up and gets ready to head back here to Jacksonville. And they'll take their bye week next week as the Florida-Georgia game rolls through here in Everbank Field. And a decent showing for the Jaguars today. Comparatively, I think, when you look back over the course of some of the other games that they've played this year, they were able to get into the end zone in a home game. And while it technically wasn't here in Everbank Field, it was the first touchdown that they have scored this season in a home game. And I think only the fourth touchdown total that the team has put on the board this year.
Yeah, they haven't gotten in the end zone much at all. And, and it's and again, and I really think it goes into the creativity that you have to have. You know, San Francisco 49ers, team that was in the Super Bowl last year, you saw once they got into the red zone that you had no clue as to what was going to take place. They put Kaepernick back at of course, he's at the quarterback position, but you can see by the personnel that came out that it's probably, he may run it or he may pass it. There's nothing that throws the defense or make them have to think or create some situations to where you may either have a mismatch or force the defense to have some kind of miscommunication to allow yourself to make a play. Because right now you don't have a player that can just line up and say, I'm going to win against teams like the San Francisco 49ers. Now, fortunately for the Jaguars, when they come back after the bye week, they start playing some teams that aren't like the Kansas City Chiefs, the Seahawks, the Indianapolis Colts, the San Francisco 49ers. They're going to get into a part of the schedule where they'll probably find some mismatches more often now. Because these teams, wasn't a big chink in their armor, that's for sure.
No, and they've still got games against all three of their division rivals here. Still have yet to play the Titans and the Texans, and I believe one more against the Colts as well at their place up in Indianapolis. And you talked about the red zone, Marco, and kind of on the flip side of the Jaguars part of things, it seems, and it's not just this game, it's been other games where I've noticed this, they get very anemic when they're backed up against the end zone, and I don't know if it's a space thing, I don't know if it's a nerves thing, what it could be, but it seems like the offense just kind of sputters out. Receivers are unable to make catches when they're backed up against the end zone 10-5 yards out.
Well, it's got to be a physical – it's not a lot of space now. And you figure Shorts, Blackman, these guys do well when they got some space out in the open field. But guys like Mercedes, they have to step up. He's going to be a bigger, better target for you. Blackman should be also. But being able to run the ball, you got to be able to run the ball. I mean, and that goes into what I was saying, more of a variability as it pertains to the play calling. You have to, because you just don't match up in a lot of areas well with these really good teams. So, I really think the plays and selection, and I've said it all season long, needs to be a little bit more, have more of a variety, utilizing a lot of the players that are available. So. That's the deal. You got to have some players on the field, man.
Got to have some players on the field. They don't have a guy who can put the team on their back right now and say, I'm going to win this for you guys if you guys are not going to do it.
But you got a couple. You just got to give them the ball.
That's exactly right. We got 42-10 is your final from Wembley Stadium. You're listening to the Jaguars post-game show on the Jaguars radio. This is the Jaguars post-game show from the HannityAutos.com studio here inside Everbank Field, back on the other side of the big old pond. Meanwhile, in London, the Jaguars falling to 0-8 at Wembley Stadium as they fall 42-10 to the San Francisco 49ers. And as we said, they now head back here to Jacksonville. They'll go into their bye week. So nearly 14 days, Marco. Marco Coleman joining me here in the studio. Nearly 14 days for the Jaguars to come back, regroup, figure out what went right and what went wrong and where they need to improve. I guess, what are some of the big takeaways they're going to come back with?
Well, they're going to come in and see that they're young players. They play well. Put them in the right situations. They play hard. They come out and, they have the athleticism. I'm talking about guys like Blackman, Shorts. They've been able to, the safety, Cyprian, and those guys. those young guys have, you know, pretty much done. You also take away that you need to get some new veterans. I mean, because the veterans, especially in that front seven, that defense, haven't been able to contribute as you would expect them to, considering they're, you know, they've been playing for a lot longer. And also schematically, offensively and defensively, they're going to have to go in and reevaluate what they're doing. Offensively, they're allowing, they're not getting the balls into the hands of the players that can make the plays enough. More creativity as it pertains to the play calling. And defensively, in the coverage, they leave guys wide open with the zones. I mean, it's probably a combination of the young guys that are back there, but also I think scheme-wise, there's not much blitzing. You're not be able to get pressure on the quarterback just by the front four. A little bit more complexity in that, and we still have some time to work on some things, I would think, over the next 14 days in order to have those type of things going. So, you know, at 0-8, it's a whole bunch of things. You know, we could be here all day as it pertains to what they
– go up from here, really. I mean,
And where they are, there aren't really any positive things. I would say the most positive thing is that these guys have been very professional in this deal. But the thing you want to do is – I think losing is okay.
I think they definitely wanted to come out and at least show up for Gus Bradley, having just lost his father and, you know, having to delay his trip and everything. You know, they did come out and show some heart in that second half, like you said, and I'm sure Gus really appreciated that. 42-10 is your final from Wembley Stadium in London. Don't go anywhere. Marco and I are coming right back here on Jaguars Radio with the Scoreboard Show, and we'll be taking your calls. So just stick with us for a moment. We want to hear what you have to say. This has been the Jaguars postgame show on the Jaguars Radio Network. We're back here inside Everbank Field. It's the Jaguars postgame show on the Jaguars Radio Network. Marco Coleman alongside Matt Augustine here. That's me. I'm stepping in this week. That's me. I know it's an unfamiliar voice for some people I know, but I'm happy to step in, and it's good to be here in the studio with you, Marco.
It's great to be here with you, Matt.
I'm enjoying it. It was good to sit down and watch a game with you, and you get a different look at an NFL game when you're sitting next to an ex-player and seeing how they break it down. As someone who just watches for fun, I love the game, but you understand it on a level that I certainly probably never will. 42-10, your final from London, and definitely a good trip for the Jaguars. I know there was lots of, you know, business discussion done there. It's about expanding the brand, all that sort of stuff. On the field, though, the result paled kind of in comparison.
It's kind of tough, and I'm sure over there they probably set it up that way to help everyone understand this is new, the team, you know, a bunch of new stuff and things of that nature. And sure, you know, bringing some, you know, Jacksonville's presence as a city, that was pretty big. So now you got more people over there that may not even heard of Jacksonville, Florida. All of a sudden, they know it. But you hate that it's being attached to an 0-8 team. But at least, hey, I believe over in London they showed a lot of pictures of Ponte Vedra and the beaches and how pretty it is over here.
Stuff.
Yeah, beyond the woeful football team.
You know, exactly. That's exactly right. Well, I mean, and people will pile on them, Marco, but you look at some of the teams they played so far this year, some of the coaches they've had to go up against, some of the Class A talent they've had to go up against, and it's not like, you know, they lost to the worst 8 teams in the season in the league to start the season.
Yeah, you figure to the Jaguars' defense, you know, the first year of head coach Gus Bradley, first year of the general manager, a lot of young players. You know, they go against the Chiefs and Andy Reid, you know, 7-0 team. They had to see the Seahawks, and Pete Carroll has put together an outstanding football team. They had to go and see, you know, although the Rams were they're not that good, but Fisher, he's a heck of an offensive coach.
He's a Super Bowl head coach.
Then you go against another Super Bowl coach, you know, at least took a team to Super Bowl in Fox. Then you just had to go against Harbaugh. They just left the Super Bowl. You know, so the really good teams they had to play, and they had to, you know, and they were tough matches. And even the teams that they had an opportunity to play, like the Raiders, well, opportunity to win, probably they're better matched up. The Raiders and the Rams, they had to play those teams on the road. So this was a real tough sledding for a first year head coach, and with a roster that's not, you know, nowhere, you know, that's got a lot of work to do, you know, to have to go through. To be 0-8 at this point, to be honest with you, is not surprising, but it's kind of the way that this 0-8 has been occurring. It could have been a little bit more competitive.
We are halfway there. You know, in theory, the Jaguars could still finish the season 500.
Yeah, they could.
In theory.
They could. And you know what? We'll talk about, you know, the rest of the schedule. We'll see.
We got the Scoreboard Show coming up here. 355-NFL-1, 1-800-355-6351. to get in touch with us here at the program. This has been the Jaguars postgame show brought to you by Geico Military. Geico has proudly supported the military for over 75 years. See how much Geico's military discounts could save you. Go to geico.com, call 1-800-MILITARY, or contact your local Geico agent today. This has been the Jaguars postgame show on the Jaguars Radio Network. Coming up next, Scoreboard Show. Marco and I will be right back.